Second speaker, Jennifer.
I'm an addict. My name is Jennifer. Should I just pretend it's Daddy's pee-pee?
Oh.
No. What was that? Right? I'm sorry. My man's pee-pee. Whatever. I'm nervous. I was going for a joke. Right? Thank you for sharing. You know, one thing you just said about the language, you know, when we come in here and we're new, you know, we hear things, right? We hear things like, just for today, or my higher power this or that, or the only requirement for membership is, like, this was a new language for me. And one thing that I did hear in the beginning was the gift of desperation. Somehow, that made sense to me. When I came into Narcotics Anonymous, I did not have that instant, like, I'm here, I'm home, I'm with my people. My thing was like, this is really great for y'all, for people who need it, because I don't need it. My story a little bit, I got clean, let me just say this, I got clean on December 15th, 1985. And the reason I say that is to say that Narcotics Anonymous works. It works. And thank you. And sometimes I go, what? I've been clean that long? I'm sure I've used at some point. But it's weird. You know, the dreams. It's like the using dreams. Like, oh, yeah. Okay. When I was the youngest of four, and I had a lot of fuck you in me. Because my dad ruled our family with an iron fist, and I watched my three siblings put up with his shit and, like, tuck their tails between them and, like, hide. And I was like, fuck that. He's not going to treat me that way. We're not having any of this. And so so when I didn't want to go to school, I didn't go to school. And I lived in detention. I was like, who fucking cares? You know what I mean? I'd get high in the bathroom during detention. That's how I tolerated it, right? So anyway, when I was 8 years old, it was the first time I got high. It was New Year's Eve, and they gave us all these little bits of champagne, right? And I downed mine, and I was like, I got that nice, warm, fuzzy feeling, right? And all of a sudden, I wanted more. So I said to my cousin, who was my age, and she was always valedictorian, straight-A student, I was always the fuck-up, dropout, right? I said to her, Elise, you cover for me, and I'm going to go get more. And she said, oh, I'm going to tell. And I was like, all right. So I devised this game of hide-and-seek, okay? I'm going to count, you go hide. So while she hid, I went and got more. I got more. I grabbed the bottle and left the kitchen and snuck off to somewhere else. Well, a little while later, after I got more, and I forgot all about her ass, she comes and she finds me and she's like, what happened? You never came and found me. Like, from the get-go, it was like the manipulating and the lying and, you know, ways and means of getting more, right? So that same year, my sister's boyfriend, who was 9 years older than I is, she had this boyfriend named Mickey, and Mickey got me high for the first time. I was 8 years old, fucking had me smoking pot with him, and I was like, this is great, this is the greatest shit that ever happened to me. And I loved Mickey. If there was a God, it was Mickey, because he protected me from my two older brothers who always used to beat the crap out of me. And I remember one time my brother Paul was beating up on me, and he came over and he picked Paul up off the ground. And he said, bitch, if I ever catch you touching her again, I'm going to fucking kill you. And I was like, yes, I love you. So every time he got me high, I was like, yay. So by the time I was 12, I was like using on a daily basis and ripping and running. And most kids would, like my schoolmates, they would skip class with me, you know, science class or whatever, and we'd go get high. But then they'd say, well, I got to go back to class. And I'd be like, why? Why? Or I got to go home. I'd be like, why? You know, like I failed out of the ninth grade because I was never fucking there. Because, you know, I'd like leave third period and I'd never come back. And I couldn't figure out why, like, nobody wanted to keep getting high all day. And what? And so, what do you mean you have to go back to class? What do you mean you've got homework to do? Like, that was not my goal. I was not one of these kids who was like, oh, I want to get into a really good college, and I'm going to find a mate and procreate, and all that good shit. Like, no, there were all these multiple parent, teacher, counselor meetings, like, in the room going, well, what gives? What are you going to do with your life? You know, this, that, and the other. And my whole attitude was like, everybody would just leave me the fuck alone. I will be fine. Not that I had a plan. I didn't have a plan. I just wanted to get used, go use all the time. And like, you got in the way of that. We were not gelling, right? So the other kids would go back to class, and I didn't, I was a snot-nosed kid. I didn't have wheels. I didn't have money. So I always used to stick my thumb out and hitchhike. And usually people who would want to get high would pick me up. And if people who picked me up who just wanted to give me a ride out of the goodness of their heart, I would realize, okay, there's nothing forthcoming here. I forgot something. I got to get out on the next corner. Would you mind dropping me? And as soon as they were out of sight, I'd stick my thumb out and do it all over again. And that was my brand of insanity. That was my, because that's how I got ways and means to use more. I ended up in another high school because basically the county I was in, they were like, we don't want her anymore. They were going to put me in this other county school. My mom said, no, fuck no. And they put me in, my parents scraped all this money together and they put me in a private school where I learned the art of cheating. And because it was private, there was kids there with more money, and more money equaled better drugs. So it really expanded my world of, I grew up in Montgomery County, and so I went to school for, and these kids had fucking money. Some of them came to school in limos. Some of them were diplomats' kids. I mean, it was great. So it sort of, like, opened my world in a lot of ways, geographically, drug-wise, et cetera. And so I learned the art of cheating there. I learned the art of manipulation there. And so when I ended up at my third high school, long story short, like, I didn't make it at that one either. And I just felt like I was a thorn in my parents' side. Like, I was just this fuck-up kid, and I was always going to be the fuck-up. So at my third high school, I met this girl. Like, we sort of sized each other up, right? It turned out she was a year younger than me, and she had been in recovery. But I didn't know that. She never revealed this to me. And I was telling her my story as it was happening. Like, I'd be in the bars all night long. I was a sight when I was 11. Okay? Nobody ever carded me. So anyway, I'd be, like, in the bars all night long and end up, like, sleeping on a place we call down DuPont Circle, P Street Beach, down by Rock Creek Park. And she started listening to my story, and she asked me to come share at the. She invited me to, on a Christmas break, she said, I'm speaking at this meeting, can you come? And I was like, what kind of meeting? Like, what are you talking about? And she told me, and I went, and it was really cool, but there was this guy there at the meeting who, I met him when I was high, like, and he was there. And then all of a sudden, I wanted to be in the meetings because he was there. It was like another drug that I was chasing. That was Christmas Day of 1984. And so in that year, my disease just progressed. It went down fast and hard. And I had jumped out of a lot of moving cars. I had been sexually assaulted. And this seemed all really normal to me. This was, I don't know how to explain it, but this is how I just felt like, this is how my life is supposed to be. I'm not like everybody else. And my attitude at the time was like, I don't want to be like everybody else. Like I said, I didn't have a plan, but I didn't want to be like all those motherfuckers getting off the subway with their briefcases and shit like that. That was not for me. And so one night I'm like, I hitchhike, I end up at somebody's house, I don't know where the fuck I am. I never knew where I was, like, anywhere around the Beltway. I didn't know if I was in fucking Upper Marlboro or Springfield, Virginia, or Silver Spring down. Like, I would just wake up, and then I would listen for, like, and then I'd end up at some party and, like, wake up somewhere out of a fucking daze and, like, go out of the house and, like, listen for traffic. Where's the main road? And get out there and hitchhike and do it all over again. And one night I was at this house. And I was a garbage head. What you had, it was going in me. And I would raid people's medicine cabinets. And if it said, do not operate with heavy machinery or drink alcohol, that was coming with me. So anyway, I was like throwing up in this bathroom. And I remember it really clearly. And that there were these black and white tiles. And I like floated above my body, and I saw my body down on the floor next to the toilet, vomit everywhere, and I just thought, I'm not ready for this. Whatever this is, I'm not ready. And I don't know how many hours later I woke up, but I like shame, right? Cleaning myself off, sneaking out of the house, listening for the traffic, getting back out on the road. Went home, cleaned up, whatever, did it all over again within another 24 hours. In the interim, I was still trying to go to meetings because people were like, keep coming back. Because I was identifying, but I was still like, not me, I'm too young, right? I'm healthy. I haven't lost a spouse or a car or a job because I don't have any of those fucking things. You know what I mean? So, but that was part of my denial. Like, well, I never lost anything. I lost myself.
Right.
I lost myself. I didn't know who the fuck I was. And whoever that was, I didn't like her, and I was running from her as much as I could. So I remember going to a meeting, and I shared it with this woman what had happened, and she just said, I'll never forget it, she just looked at me and she said, what the fuck are you doing? You're going to die. And I heard her. I heard her. I heard her message. And then I had the gift of desperation. That was when I went to meetings on time, anchored my ass into the chair for the whole hour, didn't talk shit in the back, like, you know, the main speaker tonight was talking about back there being the judge and the jury, and heard a message of recovery and took suggestions and got a sponsor and did things that were totally foreign to me. Like in the beginning, one of my first jobs in recovery, I was working minimum wage, and I was stealing all this shit, this merchandise from this Hallmark store. And because I had no self-esteem, I was giving it out to all my friends in recovery because at the time I didn't feel like I was enough, you know, like I had to bring something to the table. And so a good friend of mine in recovery said to me one day, you know, I've noticed that, you know, I know you make minimum wage, and I noticed that you've been giving a lot of these presents to your friends. And anywhere he was going with it, and I'm thinking to myself, who the fuck are you? What do you know about me? So he said to me gently, you may want to rethink that job. And I knew where he was going with it. So I called him later, and I said, okay, what do I do? And he said, write a two-week notice, give it to your employer, show up for the next 2 weeks on time, every day, leave on time every day, and don't steal nothing. And I said, okay, I can do that. And I knew he was trying to help me in like getting my foundation in that honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, because some of us do stay clean, live and dirty. And I knew that that's not what I wanted to do. Like I knew there was something here that I wanted, and I felt desperate enough to get it because I knew that one was right. I knew I was going to die. That was not the last time I used, by the way. So I went a couple more months. And the last time I relapsed is kind of an embarrassing story, so I'm not going to tell it. I shared it at breakfast. But it was the wake-up call I needed. It was like this woman like knew I had used. She knew I was like counting days, and it didn't add up. And she said, you know, the check bounced. I know you were using. You may want to rethink your clean date. And she left me that with that. And it was Christmas Day, and it was at this meeting marathon thing, and you know, I was in such a good mood because it was Christmas. She was real cool. She just left me alone. You may want to rethink your clean date. And I sat there and I cried. And I knew she was right. And I'm so grateful that that happened, because that was such a gift of in itself. Because what if I had like known, you know, it's so easy to shove that shit under the carpet, like, oh, that didn't really happen. You know, that's why we have these steps, right? These steps kind of keep us straight and honest and all that. And, you know, the steps are a real gift too. The steps have given me that gift of getting to know myself. Like, I never knew who I was when I got here. I didn't realize that I could smile. I didn't know how to laugh when I got here. I know that sounds fucked up. When I first tried it, like my friends made fun of me. I wasn't comfortable in my own skin. I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't know how to drive a car. I had never had a bank account. people in Narcotics Anonymous showed me, I know it sounds fucked up, but they showed me how to like go down and register for class at community college. Oh, I graduated high school in recovery, by the way. And I got clean in high school. And all these people came there. And that was really cool. That was really cool. And anyway, so I went back to school. I'm a registered nurse now. I take care of other people. When the addicts come in, I'm like, give them to me. I don't sell these people. I don't break my anonymity at work. I remember somebody went on Facebook and posted some fucking thing about Narcotics Anonymous, and I said, please, can you be cool about this? She goes, I don't know what the big fucking deal is. I said, the big fucking deal is that I'm a registered nurse and I'm looking for a job, and if somebody finds out I'm an addict, they're not going to let me go near those fucking drugs in the Pyxis. So I would really like to have a job. So please fucking help my cause here. You know, it's like, anonymity is for a fucking reason. I'll just say that. And as long as I'm on my little box here, I just want to say this too, because this is my opportunity. When at the end of a meeting, when we give out chips and we say, blah, 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 and if you're clean today, give yourself a hand. Any of y'all ever heard that before? Uh-huh. You don't have to fucking be clean to be in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. Okay? I'm just saying that because in my own experience, every time I relapse and somebody would say that, I would be like, am I going to clap? Or am I going to be a fucking liar again? I already hate myself. Now I'm going to go home and have another reason to feel ashamed because I don't want them to know that I'm used, that I'm high in the fucking meeting. So if you're here today, give yourself a hand. But not if you're clean today. Yes, thank God you're clean and I'm so glad, but please, please remember that you do not have to be clean in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. Please take that home with you. I have to just say that because it just makes my ass hurt when people say that. I'm one of those fucking cranky old-timers. Just like Rena. Is she a trip or what? So, I feel really blessed to be in Narcotics Anonymous. Narcotics Anonymous saved my life, and I don't say that lightly. I do not say that lightly. My predecessors came here and did what they did. And there was like no Montgomery area or east of the fucking river or any of that. There was like an East Coast area from Ohio to Atlanta. And people got in their cars and drove 12 hours for area service. We recently, like in our area, changed locations for area service, and everybody up county was like, I don't want to drive 20 minutes down to an area service once a month. Now, I used to live on this island. When I was 12 years clean, I moved to Martha's Vineyard, which was a gift. I mean, I was like, I'm clean. I can go any fucking where I want to, right? So I go there, and to do a service commitment, I would take a meeting to a recovery house on Cape Cod. And so I'd drive 40 miles down island, get on a 45-minute ferry ride, get a taxi, which was 15 minutes, over to the recovery house, do the meeting, and do that all back again. It took me like 4.5 hours. 20 minutes? Really? Did you drive 20 minutes to score, or did you say, you know, I don't want to drive 40 minutes to go cop. Can we just make it within this 10, you know, what? So anyway, all right, I'm going to get off my little soapbox here, but I'm so grateful to NA. It's taught me who I want to be today. It's taught me, like, you guys serve as this example of, like, who I want to be. I'm grateful for when people come in and share honestly about their lives because it gives me the courage to change the things I can too. Because it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of courage to get up in here and share. You know, even though you really want to say something and you blank out, totally, we've all been there. You know? And so that gift of desperation was something I understood in the beginning. When a lot of the language in here that was so new to me, it didn't add up. I was like, I don't know what you motherfuckers are talking about, but you told me to keep coming back, so I'm gonna. Because I got nothing to lose except for that shit that's waiting out there for me. And every time I'd go back out to it, it got worse and worse and worse. And I hear it's not any better. I have yet to hear. I just texted somebody from Martha's Vineyard today. Hey, how's so-and-so? Oh, Emmett went to jail, but he's out now, which is a good thing. But Ronell is in jail now. And remember, you know, Steve J, remember the guy that he OD'd last June. So it's out, you know what I mean? That's jails, institutions, and death, right? I like it here better. I like all my warm hugs, the hi family, you know, the hey, let's go to the beach for the weekend, eat a bunch of fucking ice cream and chain smoke. Yay! Woo! I love NA. Thanks for letting me share.
All right, one more hand for Jennifer.